I am Roy Malloy, and you're listening to The Dawn of Crime. This is a Dawn of Crime extra. It's just one of the uploads that I'm making that just kind of passes the time for me and hopefully passes the time for you as I talk a little bit about what I'm researching and what I'm writing about. At the moment, I'm researching a spate of crimes in 1919, the end of the war, and had a bit of a win today, so I'm going to talk about that. But it made me remember a couple of other wins I've had of a similar nature. And it always makes me feel like I want to high-five myself. because, in honesty, there aren't a whole lot of other people that really get the gravity of what I've discovered. So, tonight's scenario, I was sitting at the dinner table with the kids, and Knuckles was right up the other end. And she's got brains, right? She's a very, very clever woman with computers. And her people name is Zoe. If you're not familiar, Zoe is known in the media as Knuckles. And she's very clever with all things IT. My children mock me routinely for my inability to do anything online or with a computer. And look, I'll be honest, in honesty, they are right to mock me. I kind of think back about, you know, historically, I remember thinking my dad was hilarious because, yeah, my dad was amazing at pinball. And then when Pac-Man came out, he was, actually, I've got to give it to him, he could do Pac-Man and Galaga, the little spaceship, and you got one button that just shoot. But beyond that, he was kind of a bit lost to it and went back to pinball, and we thought it was hilarious that he couldn't play things like Moon Patrol with a jump and a fire button. And as the evolution of things went on, Street Fighter had six buttons. We mocked my dad. I could never do Street Fighter. That's possibly the benchmark for me where I kind of maxed out on my IT knowledge is Street Fighter. Anyway, I found, at the beginning of COVID lockdown, I found a death certificate for someone I'm researching. Now, this guy is, he's the father of somebody incredibly famous, right? And he died when he was 37 in 1901. And his son went on to be pretty incredible, a criminal, but incredible nonetheless. And I kind of wondered if, I believe that his death triggered a whole bunch of things that happened for that family where ultimately his son became the criminal he became because he didn't have a present father. It was also a time when his mum had like I think 7-8 children, and to then raise them alone was kind of impossible, really. And it was right at the just at the end of a catastrophic depression. And he died. And I kind of thought, I need to know how he died. I want to know if there was trauma around his death. Obviously, losing the father was incredible, but did he commit suicide? Now, that was actually Knuckles' guess that. She said, I believe he's committed suicide. I believed it was a workplace accident. So when I applied for the death certificate, I was tipping workplace accident. It was that era, also 1901, that's that time and period where industrial machines were everywhere, and they were punching away with steam, with belts, moving wheels, and a lot of people worked in factories around that kind of stuff, and, you know, they didn't have guards on any of those moving parts, and so many accidents happen where people get, they get too close and it rips at their clothes and pulls them up into the mechanisms and kills them. There's a very famous story in America about a guy who was giving a safety demonstration. And the exact, I'm laughing, I feel bad laughing, but in honesty, like, this is just irony there. He's giving a safety presentation about the machine, how it's safer than, say, you know, and he turned the wrong way and his coat got caught and it ripped his coat and him into it, into this machine and killed him. So I was tipping it was a workplace accident. Also, he had lost his job as a wheelwright. That's somebody that makes, you know, spokes on wooden cartwheels, like, kind of like a, I guess an early mechanic really, for horse-drawn carriages. And he'd lost his business in the 1890s crash, and he moved to Richmond. Now Richmond was one of those places that you can still see the skeletons of those factories. Now the buildings are still there, and then they've got these incredible 20-story apartment buildings that have been built up through the guts of them. But he moved to Richmond with the family after he lost his own business, and I thought to myself, yeah, he's gone to Richmond, got a job, and he's been killed from workplace accident. Anyway, so then I got this, I got in touch with births, deaths, and marriages, pretty straightforward, $20 for an email. You don't get the, it's not a certified copy, but you get to read the information on the death certificate, $20. For me, that's $20 well spent. I mean, I love that. That's my smoking or drinking or drugs. That's that for me is the thing I get off on, right? So I spend my $20, and I get the certificate emailed to me, and it came, and it was a zip file. I didn't even know what a zip file was. Sitting, and it came to me when I was actually having dinner. And they're all very kind to me, the kids and Knuckles. And I said, oh, let me look. I've been waiting for this because I don't understand why, but births, deaths, and marriages closed down during COVID lockdown. So for, what is it, 4 months now? I've been waiting for this thing to be delivered. And I've been writing this book for 6 months. It's a big book too. And this is pretty key to what made this psychopath the way he was. His dad dying, and it finally arrived, and I got it, and I double clicked on the open, and it was a zip file. So anyway, Knuckles opened it for me at the dinner table, and lo and behold, it was a heart attack. So neither one of us is right. He died of a heart attack. But for me, right, it's such a chase. I'm trying to give you that an example as to how much thought and anticipation goes into this, because when you're history researching, none of it comes quickly or easily. Even if you go, oh, fine, I'm finding something, bang, bang, bang. I've always found, right, and colleagues of mine also say the same thing, often you'll be landed with the beginnings of a search. So that the hunt will come to you, something will cross your path, but the actual finished product is nowhere near it. And then you'll start hunting, and you might have, you know, two or three successive finds very quickly, but when you look back, hundreds of hours have gone into emailing people, writing. I write letters every time I'm, and I think I've talked about this in a previous podcast, every time I'm researching someone and it talks about their address, if something happened in that building where there could be a scar on the actual building, like, you know, somebody got shot in this building, you shoot someone in a building, you're often not just shooting one bullet, they shoot a few, and some of them won't hit the target. I've written to a few people and said, look, can I ask you, is there any evidence of, you know, foul play, like it's describing in the newspaper, where you live now? And I've had one guy say to me, I knew about it, but what exactly do you know? So I wrote to this guy and I said, well, in the newspaper article that talks about the shooting that happened in the house you live in now in 1913, so we're 107 years ago, the police found a set of fingerprints on your back kitchen window ledge. And in the newspaper article, it said they cut the physically cut the wood of the ledge off so that they could preserve those prints, and they took that bit of wood with the fingerprints on it back to the lab so they could also use it as completely pristine, preserved evidence, right? And this guy wrote back to me, he said, oh my God, there's a piece of tin over the back window, the kitchen window ledge. And he's a builder, actually, funnily enough. And he said he looked at it and he thought, what a bodgy job someone's done. And I said, well, that's because if you take that tin off, you'll find there's a hole there where they've cut the fingerprints out, right? So that find for me, that was, I reckon I must have read about 30 to 50 newspaper articles, and only one of them referenced the window, and then the letter, and then the, you know, so such a big hunt. Now, I think my first true crime book was the research I did for The Dawn of Crime. The book was called The Dark Side of the Moon. And I've got a long-standing love with Luna Park. Luna Park, circuses, theatre in general. My previous love was those kinds of things. Love Luna Park, Melbourne. Such special, incredible memories there. Luna Park, Sydney, which was, interestingly enough, the gear that was taken to Luna Park in Sydney to build it, that stuff, a lot of the physical stuff, the rides, the roller coaster, that begun in Adelaide on Glenelg Beach. And the Adelaide people were a weird bunch. They wouldn't endorse it fully. They wouldn't go to it. And they were very... turned their nose up at it. And the Luna Park Corporation just said, you know what, whatever. And they took it. And then there were all these ads for a year following saying, for sale, wooden boards from what used to be the promenade, the wooden, you know, boardwalk. I was selling the wooden boards for years afterwards, trying to find a buyer. But, you know, I love the history of Luna Parks. And so I wrote a book. I had back surgery. I was in bed for 6 weeks. So I used that time and I wrote a book called The Dark Side of the Moon. Because as I found the research pieces, I stumbled upon a character that I'd never anticipated. I really did think I was going to be researching business people. The guy who built Melbourne's Luna Park, he was a cinema mogul. And he was Canadian-born, American-raised, spent time in England. He paid Charlie Chaplin his first million-dollar check. So the guy who built Luna Park in Melbourne in 1912, opened in 1913, was a cinema man, and he had one of his primary cinemas in Melbourne was in the Bourke Street Mall, and almost directly opposite David Jones now. It was called the Melba Theatre. Now, Dame Nellie Melba was an opera singing mega celebrity in her own time, and so it was named after her. And the Melba cinema and theatre and cinema, kind of that overlap period, it was a very big deal. It was in Bourke Street. But when he built that Luna Park in Melbourne, there's not a lot you can find about him, actually him. So as I was researching the people who were surrounding the Perth Luna Park in West Australia, in Scarborough Beach, I needed to find out how the creator of Melbourne's Luna Park died, right? His name was J.D. Williams. James Dixon Williams, and he was a small kind of rotund man. In fact, Google him, James Dixon Williams. I'll put a photo of him as the thumbnail to this clip, actually. And he died in New York. I only found that out later. Now, I wrote 3 letters to different archives in America, and there's a huge, huge difference in American research and Australian, or English research and Australian research. I feel very, very privileged and lucky that I'm researching Australian topics, because we're such a small country. At a time when America had just shy of, I think it was 27 million people, we had 5 million. It's always been about 5 to 1. For every one person in Australia, there's 5 in America. More or less. I mean, I'm like not being exact, of course, but when you start trying to find a person, I'm trying to find a guy at the moment called Henry Slater. He's part of the Fitzroy Vendetta. I'm trying to find him on Ancestry. I've got really 2 options in Australia. Go to America, there's about 400. It's the same with World War II. You know, you try and find your ancestor in World War II. And I've done that for one of my grandfathers in Australia. He's the only one who shows up on the, you know, the ancestry searches. In same name, England, there's about 15 of them. So the numbers are very different, right? But I was looking for J.D. Williams, who is the guy who built the Melbourne Luna Park. I wanted to know how he died. he was a very difficult guy to research, right? Because he was born in Canada, joined a circus, went down through America. Then he went to England for part of his cinema career, came to Australia. So the four different countries, trying to research somebody across four different countries is very, it's time consuming. It's also very expensive because in particularly England and sometimes America, a lot of the databases are privatized. So you get a library that says, yeah, we've 100% got those details. You need to pay a subscription. So that's $3, it's $20, it's varying. I've got to say, I'm going to use this opportunity also to say Ancestry.com is ridiculously expensive. Absolutely ridiculously expensive. Just, that's my bandwagon. So I've said that, I've had my rant. there you go. But nonetheless, I'm trying to find this, the J.D. Williams' death cause and certificate, right? At least I wanted to know what year he died, because that wasn't present either. So I start Googling, and I Google places and newspapers. Newspapers gave me some information, but again, all the American newspapers kind of overlap to privatized collections. In Australia, we have a webpage which is, it's called Trove, T-R-O-V-E, like treasure trove, dot N-L-A, National Library of Australia, dot, I think it's net.au. But Google Trove newspaper, it'll come up. Every newspaper we've published, or more or less, has been scanned and uploaded there with searchable words. It's incredible. So, you know, it's very easy to find what you're looking for on Trove. Whereas trying to find this guy in America, even the newspapers, you'll get, like I said, you'll get the Daily Tribune in somewhere, probably has that article, but they've said you can have access, you've just got to pay us a $22 subscription. So, you know, I found, like, 6 months went by, and I was kind of bashing my head against a brick wall, couldn't really find, so I got on Facebook, and I joined a bunch of New York genealogy sites. He was known to be in New York as his last kind of place he lived. So 6 months since I begun this process, I had the book finished. My editor, Tammy, who's very, very patient. Tammy is the most long-suffering person I've ever met. She just waits patiently. She's very polite, very kind. And she's waiting for this one last detail. This is the last bit. She's waiting, and the book's ready to go. And I got in touch with a genealogy group in New York, and one of them said, look, just use your numbers game. Now, I don't know, I've never been to New York, would love to go, have never been, and this lady, very kind lady on Facebook, she said, just using logic, he may have died in maybe as many as a dozen different hospitals. At that time, he would have been elderly. And of those hospitals, I can't tell you where the records for maybe 6 of 7 of them are. You know, the hospitals are no longer, and who knows where their records are. But the big one, the big hospital where he's most likely to have been, is still there. So write to it and just have a shot. So I physically wrote them a letter, you know, with a stamp on paper. For those of you just joining us who are under 30, letters are a thing that used to happen in the past where you'd write on a piece of paper with a pen and send it in those red boxes you see beside the road. I just became old, didn't I? I really did. Patronizing and old. Anyway, so I wrote a letter to them and they wrote back and they said, yeah, we've got a database and we believe he might be in it. Here's where you look. So I looked, I found him, I paid $70 Australian, $70 Australian to get a hold of that record. And lo and behold, I was sure I'd lost that money, right? I thought to myself, nah, I reckon it was maybe 4.5 months, maybe 5 months went by. But I was just sure I'd lost $70. I thought to myself, I had no proof whatsoever that money was going to even the hospital. It was a weird kind of, I don't know, I can't describe it. It wasn't, didn't have the streamlined looking simplicity of a professional page. Anyway, sure enough, it showed up. And J.D. Williams died of syphilis. Third stage severe syphilis. Which is interesting because I guess I was looking for anybody else who had written a piece about him from when he was still a very big going concern and a businessman. No one had. No one touched that. Well, sorry, pardon the pun. Nobody went near that story. Probably just out of being polite and the sensibilities of the day. But that hunt for me was like tonight. I got it in the post when I was at home. It came in the mail and I opened it up. I didn't even know it. I had a very close friend in America and it was an American letter. So I thought it was from her. I opened the letter and it was his death certificate. I was blown away. Absolutely blown away. It was a proper certified death extract. But tonight, finding the cause of death for the father of this criminal has been something that I've found fascinating. So for me, the ongoing process of research, even if I stopped now, I'd still be getting results coming to me for maybe 6 months, I reckon. But yeah, so that's just part of my journey, and that's what would you call this? I mean, that's the hunt that we undertake. But I hope you enjoyed this. This is a small history extra podcast for the Dawn of Crime. If you are so inclined, do make sure you jump on the internet and Google the Dawn of Crime. I have published 4 different books with 1 special edition. The special edition was the Dark Side of the Moon, which is the biography of the Luna Park that came and went in Scarborough Beach, West Australia. And so many of the people that were involved with it were arrested and jailed for being con men, bootleggers, having gambling rackets, prize fights, gun battles, and more. But I'd love you guys to check those books out. If you're a light reader, if you don't like something heavy and you like something light, the Dawn of Crime series was designed so that people could read a small amount on a train journey. That was my intended audience, so that you could read a biography of someone easily, start to finish, in a train journey, 20 minutes. And this each book contains, 12 to 15 different biographies. And I hope you guys enjoy them. Check them out. Make sure you send me a nice message and share these posts.